When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Disruptive CEO Nation, where company founders, entrepreneurs, and cutting-edge thinkers drop in from around the globe to share startup stories, insider insights, and hard-earned success lessons. Now, here's your host, a woman who mastered business by placing heels on the ground all over the world, having worked with and coached CEOs and senior leaders from over 90 countries, and who wants you to build your best business future, Allison K. Summers.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Disruptive CEO Nation. We're going to talk to a business founder who's not only going to tell you about his journey, which has something to do with Tibetan monks, got my curiosity up, but also he is a world-renowned communication expert. So he is going to tell us how we can personally and professionally up our game, as well as how we can up the game of our teams. So it is absolutely my pleasure to introduce you to Richard Newman. We're heading over to London to speak with him. He is the founder of Body Talk, the science of communication, and he has a new book coming out in 2023 called Lift Your Impact. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Allison. Good to speak to you.
Hey, I gotta hear the story. Tell me about Tibetan monks and how it fits into your life.
Yeah. So when I was 18 years old, and my friends and I were deciding what did we want to do when we left school, everybody else that I knew was going off to university. And we had this talk given to us by a guy who'd been at our school a couple of years prior. And he came in and he talked about this adventure he'd had of going off to Kathmandu and working at a Nepali orphanage. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is the sort of adventure I want to go on. I'm not quite sure what I want to do next with my life. And even though I had university offers, I thought that's what I want to do. And so I put myself forward to this organization and said, send me somewhere that's as remote as can be where I can really help people. And initially they actually said, hey, do you want to go and be the head of drama at a sort of private school for rich Indian kids? And I said, no, you don't understand. I want to go the opposite direction. Send me somewhere very remote. So they said, well, there's this monastery that nobody's ever been to teach before. And we've heard that they might want to teach her. What do you think? I said, that's the one. And so I ventured across India. And just bear in mind at this point, so I'm 18. I hadn't been overseas without my parents before. And I went on this journey where I started off in Delhi, traveled across the country and took, you know, various sort of trains and taxis and tuk-tuks to get up to eventually find this monastery where, when I met the monks, I realized they didn't speak a single word of English. They spoke Tibetan, Nepali, and Hindi. And there I was being able to speak relatively good English and a bit of French and German and not having any language I could use to connect with them. And so I had to use body language and tone of voice as my only tools to connect with them and start to build a relationship with them. And I stayed with them for the course of 6 months where I was teaching them in their kitchen, usually during a blackout. We had, you know, rarely had electricity. We barely had a working phone, no internet back then, no emails. And by the end of 6 months, through using body language and tone of voice, I was able to teach them how to have a pretty decent conversation with me in English. And I have stayed in touch with them ever since. But what it really gave me was an understanding of how body language and tone of voice can be used at a deeper, richer level than most people generally think about to really convey and communicate and connect with other people, which then brought me back to the work that I've been doing in my business up until today.
Well, and you've been running this business for 22 years, and there's so many things I want to ask you, and these interviews go very, very quickly. So I want to jump forward to, you know, looking at, you now have over 100,000 clients globally, worldwide. You're, like I said in the intro, you're a significant communication expert in the business marketplace. Tell us a little bit about what your team looks like today and some of the top offerings that your clients are looking for?
Yeah. So I have at the moment, I think about 23 people working with me, and we're all based in the UK, but we do work all the way around the world. And we effectively do one to many, one to a few, and one to one. So I primarily go and do work where I'll be speaking on stages. I might be speaking to up to 1,000 people in person, or with the virtual work that we now do, might have up to 3,000 people at a time who I'm working with on those one to many masterclasses, who then tend to come to our team for a bit more in-depth work, and we'll work with a few people at a time. And then senior executives tend to want that one to one approach. But I've noticed that what people are looking for in terms of training has really changed over the years. Mm-hmm. When I first started, people were looking for public speaking skills, like how to be impressive behind a lectern in front of a group. And then that moved more towards presentation skills, where it was a bit more sort of TED Talk styly, wanting to make sure that people could be engaging as a storyteller. And then more recently, people have been looking more at the one-to-one interactions. That's really where they wanted to increase their skills for conflict resolution and effective one-to-one giving feedback and dealing with challenging members of staff. But particularly the biggest piece that we have seen change since the pandemic is that in 2019, 70% of our work as an organization would be going to work with people in person overseas. So we'd be flying, you know, as far and wide as Australia, across Asia, across the Americas, and only 30% of our work was in the UK. Today, though, we had a massive shift towards virtual working. So I'd say today, about 70% of our work is virtual, and 30% remaining face-to-face. And I think in North America, people mainly want us to be there face-to-face, but the rest of the world is still very happy with the virtual way of work.
Yeah, no, I can see how those changes would absolutely take place. So I want to jump and ask you, in your book, you speak a lot about mindset and influence and keeping your eye on the future. So what can we as CEOs and senior executives, what are a couple tips and tricks that we can add to our toolkit to be better communicators? What are some of those top things, Richard, you would give us off the cuff?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things to think about is, firstly, you know, I've named this book Lift Your Impact with the primary focus around lift, which is that in order to be a good communicator, you need to think about your intention towards others. And the strongest intention you can go in with in order to have a strong legacy when you leave the room is to think about lifting other people from a negative or a neutral state towards a more positive state by the time you leave the room. And if you're going in with that intention, then once you have left that room, what happens next is going to be much more effective. And I think too often people forget, well, what is my intent? What is the feeling that I have right now? What is the feeling that I want to get across? And what is the impact of that going to be? And too much communication is ineffective because people say, I'm just going to speak my mind. I'm just going to be myself. I'm going to say this because I feel like saying it, rather than thinking ahead to the state that you need other people to be in order to be effective in that situation. And so to go one step back from that, in order to lift others, you need to lift yourself. So anybody in a CEO or a leadership position needs to make sure they take time at the beginning of each day to create a lifted state for themselves, which you can think about as mindset or state, or however you prefer to think of it, getting into that lifted state so that you can then go and be able to lift others in your communication. And when it comes to specifics around how you lift other people, areas that we focus on a lot that have been, you know, really popular to talk about in business recently are storytelling, which we break down as the message that you share, but also the part that people sometimes forget is the storyteller, because you can have brilliant content and deliver it poorly and nobody's listening. You can also be a brilliant communicator and really not have anything to say. And what you need to do is to work on both pieces. And always remember that your ideas are not going to speak for themselves. You have to do it. So you have to work out, how do I put this into effective mm-hmm. storytelling structure that people engage? But then how do I bring it to life with my body language, tone of voice, and intent in a way that it's going to engage people?
Oh, I think these are all such wonderful things. And, you know, Richard, for me, I'm looking back at my career and I have flashes of when I first started in business. I was trained as a professional educator. So I was trained to manage a classroom with children. But I didn't do that for very long. I went into business, and I went into business in Detroit in a union environment. And then I was constantly accused of not being firm enough and strong enough to, you know, work with all the guys. And then I had to like relearn my whole communication style. And I was in business around unions for many, many, many years. And then I switched to be an executive in nonprofit management. Then my style was too harsh. It was too direct for everybody. And they would be like, you know, you intimidate people. And I had to relearn a whole new style. And I can see how professionals might feel like I've got this, like I'm in a certain environment and I've got this, but they don't have it because you can't apply the same communication style to every environment. And I think I'm quite grateful I've learned that in my career. So I think the things you're saying make perfect sense. I got to tell you, as much as I know and understand the piece about the importance of storytelling, it's not as easy as that.
Yeah, so true. That I've had a couple of good conversations with Robert McKee, who's known as the godfather of storytelling in Hollywood. And he says, the funny thing about storytelling is that, you know, nobody would ever go and listen to an orchestra and think, oh, I could write an orchestration. But people listen to a story and they think, oh, well, I bet I could write a great story.
No, I think it's hard.
Yeah, it is. You've really got to understand the structure. And even if you understand it, there's so many books around it, like, The Hero with a Thousand Faces and The Writer's Journey and various others. And they go into depth of what storytelling is. And you end up with the 17 stages of the hero's journey, which frankly, when you go into your next team meeting to talk to them for 10 minutes, you haven't got time for it. You can't go through the belly of the whale and the denial of the quest and all these things. You've got to be able to do it in a way where in 30 seconds, just like a brilliant TV commercial, you can tell an entire story that people think about for weeks afterwards that compels them on a journey forwards. So to put that into really simple terms quickly, is that in order to tell an effective story, you need to engage three areas of the brain, and you have to do them in the right order. You have to engage the survival mind, the emotional mind, and then the logical mind. And 99% of meetings only focus on engaging the logical mind, and people come out of it with cognitive fatigue, needing two cups of coffee before they go into the next meeting where they have, again, all this cognitive fatigue going on. So effective storytellers will engage the survival mind first, then the emotional mind, then the logical mind, which is what great stories do all the time. You see someone under threat, you see them imagining a grand, wonderful, better future, and you see them go on a journey and through a process that allows them to get there. And that's what keeps us captivated through a two-hour movie or a 500-page book. But you can do that in the space of a five-minute meeting if you just engage those three areas of the mind.
Well, I'm going to, again, jump topics, but I think for our listeners, if they're intrigued to learn more, I do tell people if you're near a computer to go take a look, because the website is ukbodytalk.com. So if you're near a computer, go take a look and you can find out more. But Richard, before we press record, we were talking about the evolution and the changes of the workforce. And I really don't want to talk about it from a generational standpoint. I think that's like too easy of trying to break it down, but people overall have just changed. And I think that makes communications very difficult when you layer in, yes, we have the generations and, but with COVID and this post-COVID world, people have severely changed the way that they look at communication or interpersonal relationships. And surely that's got to change the way that you see people wanting to hire your services and the types of training or courses they're looking for. So can you give us any insights into, I guess it really reveals the pain points that business owners and business leaders are going through. So what are you seeing those pain points being these days?
Yeah, so it's been fascinating for me because I work with so many different kinds of businesses, so many different industries, to see what's happened the last couple of years. Where, to give you one example, there is a company I was working with in the States, and flew out to work with their team, and they've got the most phenomenal building that you'd ever get to work in, where it's got a spa, it's got pool tables, it's got the best restaurant with the most incredible food and brilliant artwork everywhere, and it's designed to hold 5,000 people in the building. And when I was there, there was maybe 100 people, maybe 100, maybe 50, of which we were a dozen of those. And so to bring people back into buildings these days, and that's something I've seen repeated by clients, so many clients around the world. The only client or the only type of industry where that's not the case is business schools. I've noticed that business schools, MBA students, they want to be in the room with each other. They want to build up network. They want that person-to-person contact. They understand it's a pivotal moment in their career. They want to be there. But in other companies, there is a struggle to get people face-to-face. So, the pivotal skill for people to understand right now is to figure out how to have really effective virtual communication. Is a critical skill that people cannot take for granted and think, well, I know how to turn on a webcam, therefore I know how to do virtual communication. You've got to get extraordinarily good at understanding your virtual presence right now. And the other piece that I've seen people start to understand too is that hybrid meetings are currently not working effectively. And the reason being that, a virtual meeting can work really well because you're all virtual. You can get your tech set up, you can engage people, you can have virtual breakouts. And an in-person meeting works really well, but it works with a different kind of dimension. Then if you try and do both of those at the same time, it means that everybody loses something. And so we've been encouraging people towards the idea of have a virtual meeting for the people who are virtual, have an in-person meeting for the people who are in-person. But until we get to the point where there are, I don't know what it will be, virtual reality or 3D holograms of people in a room where we can interact in a way that feels like everybody is really there, then you've got to see those two things as separate. And so we've gone to a space of encouraging people, if they're working with us and they've got people who cannot be in the room, then we say, great, we run a session for them that is virtual and give them the treatment that they really need to have so they get the maximum out of that experience. And people who are in the room get a different experience. And the last thought just to add into that is to say, where we're encouraging people to go, where we're noticing businesses are going, is that for day-to-day meetings and conversations, they're doing them virtually. But if there's an important moment, if there is a team gathering or a conference or a pivotal change in what's happening in a business, then those are the moments that they are spending the time, spending the money to bring people together to make sure that in-person contact happens for pivotal messages, to make sure that the conversations and the rapport is built and the relationships are there to make sure that those are effective moments.
I like the term reflective moments. And we currently, the nonprofit that I lead up, we only have people in once a week, and we call it collaboration day, and we try to do those in-person meetings, but you're right, it's still clunky. And I do have part of my team that moved away during the pandemic and are in other states. And it's clunky. And as a business leader, I worry about it. And I can't say that I've mastered it. So I appreciate the words of wisdom that you offer there. Hey, 22 years building your company. I like to ask my guests at times, what were some of those naked truths? What were some of the hardest lessons you learned as you had to expand and had to go up? And I always joke and say, I have this phrase, Richard, that nobody should be, no politician should be elected unless they've had to make payroll. I think there's just something very important about knowing what it's like to have to manage that income and the expenses and make payroll. But share with us some of the things that were interesting lessons as you built your company.
Yeah, well, the main one that comes to mind, which will be no surprise for people, I guess, is thinking back to the beginning of March 2020. So let's say in 2019, 100% of the work that my business did was in person. We hadn't even ever done a Skype call at this point.
Oh,
and we would have somewhere, I think at the point, maybe between 1,000 to 1,500 bookings per year for our team to go and do events all over the world. And 70% of our work involved getting on an aeroplane. And so at the beginning of 2020, everything was looking great. We looked like we were going to have the biggest, strongest year ever. And then by the middle of February, people were starting to wobble. And by 1st of March, we had no income coming in. And I've got a lot of people on the payroll. We had a big, fancy, expensive London office with thousands of pounds going out of the business every day on various things. And my team coming to me saying, we're going out of business. And in fact, my industry, the live events business, was saying, we're going to go out of business in panic stations. And, you know, people were starting to say to me, we need to make people redundant. We've got to take out big government loans. We have to refuse to pay our taxes. It's the only way to survive. And it was a huge wake up call for me where I thought, okay, we could go in that direction. But then I thought, hang on, I've been teaching mindset. I've been teaching storytelling to my clients for years. And this is a moment where it's a moment of reckoning around what is my mindset right now and what is my ability to change the story. And so I decided that we weren't going to go in that direction, that I wasn't going to make people redundant at the worst possible time for them to be looking for a job, that we would look after everybody. And so I had to work very hard on my mindset. I was getting up early each day, like 5 a.m. each day, to meditate and get my head around the situation, to figure out what I could do each day, to then go out and influence the people on my team within my business, and then go out and influence and engage with our clients. And the new story that I had to tell for myself, my clients, was what if it's possible that the biggest challenge we ever have becomes the biggest opportunity? What if we figure out a way to serve people now that we've never done before that could actually be a greater offering than we never considered? And it went from the position of having no work at all to 3 weeks later, we had an entire online training platform that we'd created with over 100 videos and podcasts and downloads available and online quizzes that we could use to supplement training, retraining the entire team around virtual training so that we could work with people. And to cut a long story short, by the end of 2020, financially, that was the best year we've ever had. And we've kept on growing from there. And it looked very bleak early on. But for me, it was sort of powerful lessons of that the leader, the decision maker behind things, has to figure out a way to be the rock in the storm, not to get caught up in the whirlwind that's going on, but to figure out a way to make sure, like you say, to make payroll for people. Because I've always thought people, you know, they like working with me or my team. I want to make sure that they can pay their bills, they can pay their mortgage, they can feed their families, they can enjoy life as well as enjoying the work that we do. And so, yeah, that was very much crunch time for us. And I feel very grateful that we found a way through that.
There's something that you said in that story that I want to tap into. And that was this piece about you as a leader getting into the right mindset to show up. Because I think that's one of the things that the pandemic has worn on a lot of leaders, is that sometimes I show up and I'm like, I should remove myself from this moment because I'm not in the right frame for this moment. And I don't feel like if I look back over my career, I felt that as much as I did during the pandemic. Because to your point, all of us that were in any sort of executive leadership position had faced so many new challenges. So I appreciate you sharing your story, and I appreciate that, you know, the concept of being the rock in the storm and what it takes for that. Hey, I want to pick your brain on one other thing. We're coming up on our time. You talked about your company's shift to working in the virtual. Quick tips on how we can improve our presence when we are leading virtual environments.
Yeah, great question. So, well, to give a few quick tips that people can use immediately, which we like to share with people, is like, first of all, approach this with a state of mind of you're going to be doing virtual conversations with people for the rest of your life, not just the rest of your career, the rest of your life. And again, we might show up as holograms in the future, I don't know. But we've got to get to the point where just turning on a webcam is not the way that we do things. So three things that I talk to people about is height, light, and the rule of thirds. So height very simply means, and everyone can immediately do this if they're listening to this, is get a tape measure and measure the height from your webcam down to your desk, then measure the height of your eyes down to the desk, and it should be the same height. And if it's not, if it's lower, if the camera is lower than your eyes, then you'll look like you're looking down on people. If it's higher than your eyes, you're going to look like you're looking up at people. What you want is an eye-to-eye conversation. So second piece on that is light. You've got to just check your surroundings and figure out, you know, it's no accident that right behind me here is a darker looking bookcase, and on the sides, it's slightly lighter. And the reason being, I want to make sure that light is coming towards me, it's slightly darker behind me, so that I pop on the screen and I'm easier to pay attention to. So I've got to make sure that light is coming towards you. Make sure there's no windows behind you. If there is a window behind you, you've got to make sure that you either have curtains or you move your desk. It's that simple, really. And then the rule of thirds piece, and this is the one that still amazes me and really amuses me when I go onto virtual calls with people, where you sometimes see, you can just see someone from the chin upwards, and you maybe see them like in the corner of their shots, like the wall behind them is the most interesting thing, and you can barely see who they are. So you want to be able to make sure that you use the rule of thirds, which in photography means your eyes are one third down from the top of the shot, and then they're in the central third of that shot too. What that allows you to do if you do this is that you want to be in a position too where if you reach out your hand, you can't touch your camera. If you can touch your camera, you're way too close. It needs to be far enough away that there's, you know, a good sort of 10 inches maybe between the end of your fingers and the webcam. And that then allows you to gesture on camera if you want to get that engagement. So ideally what all these things are aiming to do is to make it appear like you are across the boardroom table from people as if you're in a room with them. So they physically can engage with you. And the last sort of bonus tip that I would have for people on this that I had to learn really quickly is that the stories that you tell people when you are online with them, when you're having a virtual meeting, they've got to be so much shorter and engage the other person so much faster. Because when I'm in person, I could tell a story for 25 minutes and people are hanging on to every word. And I tried doing that in a virtual meeting and people were bored within 3 minutes. So you've got to make sure that you are back and forth more with somebody when you're engaging with them virtually to make sure they stay with you rather than the rest of the environment that is around them when they're not there with you in person.
Absolutely. I think, Richard, back to when I originally went to university, I originally went to learn and train in theater. Then I shifted. But no surprise, in my early professional career, I worked in live event marketing. So I was an experiential marketer for years. So very similar processes. But one of the things that I was trained very, very early on, and even as a school teacher, right, the like owning six-year-olds' attention is to be very animated and to fill your space. But it's still the same thing in virtual. And I've always been the type of leader or speaker, I know I'm going to lose the attention of the people I'm speaking to, whether you're presenting, whether you're speaking to your teams, whether you're a speaker on stage, you need to fill your space. And I think the same thing is in the virtual world, because I happen to be recording this and looking at you as we're doing this interview, and I can see you using your space. I can see your gestures and your hands, and it keeps it alive. And I think that those small things really help, and they show engagement and interest. So I think all of your wisdom for our listeners is really great. And I never heard the one about reaching out and touching your camera, which means I might be a little too close to mine right now. But thank you so much, Richard. What is next for you? The book, we're having this lovely conversation a couple of months before the book is coming out. But what is 2023 looking like for you and your business? If we came back and talked to you at the end of the year, what do you hope is the exciting story that you're telling?
Yeah, well, I mean, every year I like to reach more people, I like to empower more people and elevate what we're doing and transform them further as well, so that we're not just, you know, doing teaching, we're creating really long-lasting transformation. So for us, there's a lot of exciting things happening next year. We're going through a big rebrand to excite and engage more people. But for me, you know, the big focus, I've got May the 2nd, 2023 is when my book is coming out, Lift Your Impact. Which I'd love it if anybody wants to go ahead and pre-order. But very much sort of teaching the lessons from that book, the lessons that I've been learning over the last few years since my last book, is what I'm really passionate to share with people in all kinds of training events that we're doing. But I'm also expecting to see, you know, we see our business growing next year and serving more people worldwide in all sorts of different ways that we can reach them. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to the new year.
Richard, thank you so much for being our guest. If people want to learn more, take some action, where should they go and what should they do?
So people can connect with me on LinkedIn. So I'm Richard Newman from Body Talk. They can find me on Instagram, which is at Richard Newman Speaks, or you can simply go to Amazon.com, pre-order your copy of Lift Your Impact.
Thank you so much, Richard. Hey, to our listeners, if Richard said something that you think somebody else needs to hear, pass along a copy of this episode. And again, go take a look at what their company's doing and see how it might be of use to you. And as always, if there is an engaging CEO that is doing something interesting and uplifting in the world that you think we need to speak with, send me a note at connect@alisonksummers.com. Thank you so much, Richard. Hey, it was really great to listen to the insights that you shared with us today. Thanks again for being a guest.
Thank you.
This show has been produced by Market Domination, LLC. To discover how you can have your own show completely done for you and turn it into a real published book and become the authority in your marketplace, go to www.marketdominationllc.com/podcast offer.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.